It is Monday, May 22, the Big Sports Breakfast on Sky Sports Radio and Radio Tab. If you are just tuning in, big news in the last half hour or so from in Queensland in the Courier-Mail reporting that Billy Slater has dropped Caelan Ponga and Dane Gagai from the Queensland squad ahead of Origin 1. But the team's set to be confirmed today, but to particularly the Caelan Ponga news. And this report in the Courier-Mail indicates that they were set to be there before the game against the Sharks on Saturday afternoon in Coffs Harbour, where they were well beaten, and Gagai had some defensive issues in that game. But no Caelan Ponga, and we know, Loz, how effective he has particularly been when he's put that maroon jersey on.
Yeah, well, there's been talk about Dane Gagai for a while, whether they were going to pick him, so that's sort of no surprise, although I thought at the end of the day they would have went with him, given they always rave on about the loyalty of someone doing the job in the jersey the previous season. So I thought Gagai might hang on to a spot. Might not have been in the centres, but possibly on the wing. Caelan is a different proposition altogether. They must have their concerns about him being able to handle the intensity of Origin and the way that he received that head knock on the weekend. They obviously thought about it long and hard. And the only reason I think they wouldn't have picked him is I think they don't want to be left short. They possibly think that he's more susceptible to a head knock at Origin level. And that spooked them a little bit on the weekend, seeing him leave the field for an HIA. Then got the okay to return. Wasn't great. He wasn't like he was the previous week where he played really good football. So I'm assuming they just think that they don't want to run the risk of him leaving the field with a HIA when you've got a guy like Reece Walsh who's been in great form for the Broncos sitting there and ready to go. That's what I'm thinking.
Big call. Well, you're telling me his Origin career's over. That's what they're telling him then. Because he's not going to play the rest of his career with no head knocks.
No, you wouldn't think so.
So surely
they might be thinking he's not confident enough at that level at this stage.
So do you think they've had that conversation with him? Is that what it's come down to?
I'd say Billy would have ring him, yeah.
Okay. Well, then that's very different to being dropped.
Yeah, I think Billy would have had a conversation.
If there's a conversation and Caelan, if he's come out and said that, he might have said maybe you're better off going
another way.
The other way.
Yeah.
See, I think we need more information.
Yeah.
If he's just been blatantly dropped because of that, I think they've just told him his Origin career's over then.
Yeah.
Which is a massive call.
Yeah, I wouldn't say his Origin career's over, but
man, he's gonna have more head knocks in his
over
career.
His ability to handle and cope with the intensity of State of Origin. But they might just think that they need to see him play, because he's been out a period of time, come back, played a game, suffered what they considered to be a head knock, had to leave the field on the weekend, got assessed, got cleared.
Yeah, doesn't that give you confidence, the fact that he was cleared and he come back?
Yeah.
I'd take more confidence. I'd be glass half full going, you know what? That shows. He can still take a head knock, get up, be cleared, come back on the field.
Well, it'll be interesting when Billy Slater talks to the media about what his thoughts were in and around Caelan.
Morning, Buzz.
Yeah, good morning, guys. Obviously, Caelan Ponga is a big story, and you guys have just been discussing it. Laurie, you're 100% right. We were making phone calls last night, and he did suffer the head knock up in Coffs Harbour on Saturday. What concerned them most, did you see his play the ball or his non-play the ball late in the second half? And he just appeared, in my view, to have lost all sense of, where he was on the football field. And that was obviously the concern for Billy Slater. And I actually agree with the decision. Origin is another step up, isn't it, from NRL in pace, power, everything about the football game. And why risk him when we saw that incident on the weekend, when you've got one of the form players in the competition in Reece Walsh there to step into that maroon side? Now, the other player you spoke about and summed it up very well, Dane Gagai, wonderful servant for Queensland over a long period of time. Anyone who watched that game in Coffs saw he was absolutely carved up by Connor Tracy. Before that game, Gagai was in. But again, Billy Slater and his selectors are very good at this. The hammer from the Dolphins has been in as good a form as Reece Walsh. So that wasn't a selection shock to me that Gagai's missed out. The other player from the Broncos was a bit of a surprise who missed out was Kurt Capel. But they've picked a really, really strong side, the Maroons. And the question mark with them is the reserve bench and Tino picked there in jersey number 14. You all saw his forearm. He was running and lifted his forearm and collected Reid Marnie yesterday. The match review committee are looking at that this morning. And I'm not sure that he's not going to get time for what he did to Reid Marnie.
He's got to get suspended for that, doesn't he, Loz?
Oh, I think you get charged, but depending on what the charge is. I was reading somewhere if he only gets a charge, a grade one, contrary conduct or strike, I think he's able to play. But if it's a grade two, I think he misses state of origin. So, and the other thing about it yesterday was the bunker looked at that. The bunker looked at that.
The bunker, yeah.
The bunker looked at that and cleared it.
Yeah. Just with the New South Wales team, boys, I can quickly read it out. Tedesco, Adokar and To'o on the wings. Latrell and Turbo after that mighty game yesterday in the centres. Luai Cleary, Yo at lock. Liam Martin and Cam Murray in the second row. Haas and Parlo up front. Nappy Coruscant has beaten Damien Cook. On the bench, Nico, Hudson Young, Tevita Pangai Jr. and Tyson Frizzell. The players I feel desperately sorry for, Campbell Graham. Wow, yeah. Form centre in the competition this year. It's been outstanding for South. I also feel for Damien Cook. I know Appy's come good the last month of the comp, but in my view, Cook's been the form hooker in the comp, even more so than Harry Grant. Since the beginning of the season, I know he had an off night like every other South player against Parramatta at Allianz on Friday, but we're short for front rowers, New South Wales, Turbo, Jake Turbo, Spencer Lane-New, Regan Campbell-Gillard unavailable for selection. I think Tevita Pangai Jr. is an inspired choice on the bench because there's always nonsense. There's always, you can get away with a bit more in origin, and I think he's a sensational player. And this could be the making of his career to do it all at this level and play a key role for New South Wales.
Yeah, I don't mind it. The only thing that worries me about Tevita, and again, you mentioned it there, Buzz, you tend to get away with a lot more in origin than what you do in the NRL, but he has got a brain explosion in him and discipline at times can be poor, but if he can control that, I think he's got all the attributes to be a really good representative player. You know, he's got that, he's got that toughness about him. He carries the ball strongly. He can offload, which I think is a great skill to have at that level. And if he copes with the speed and the intensity of it, I think he could be an inspired selection, and that's what we love about Origin.
I think he's changed his ways a lot, Laurie. There's a few people I talked to at Canterbury, and look, I know he recently caught up with boxing trainer Johnny Lewis to do a bit of training. He's a guy this year who's really knuckled down and worked on his extras. Like most football teams, they come in there for training, 4 days a week and do their videos and go out and do their field work and do a bit in the gym. This guy has been working 7 days a week. He's really, really committed because, you know, he needs to sort out his long-term future with the Bulldogs. And I honestly think, I can't believe they'll think the Jack DeBell and the way St George have been going and what more Tevita Pangai Jr. will offer to this team than Jack DeBell.
Do you know what a hip drop tackle is?
Oh, Laurie. I just don't know what to say about the bunker and the refereeing over the weekend. I really don't. And look, let's talk up Origin and these two great football sides that are going to play in Adelaide. But you know what? All the fans are talking about in the pubs, at the water coolers, wherever is the bunker, and the referees. Now, you asked me, do I know what a hip drop was? Well, do you know what a headbutt is? Mm. And Victor Radley, on Saturday morning, was suspended for 3 or 4 matches if he fights it for a absolutely blatant headbutt, right? Wasn't the nastiest headbutt I've ever seen, but it was a headbutt. He stays on the field. Fast track yesterday, Reed Marnie gets 10 in the sin bin, the most pathetic sin bin call I've ever seen for an alleged hip drop. Like, who is it? It's just unbelievable that Radley stayed on the field. And then, what's doing with the bunker on Thursday night? You saw it at the end of the game. Reece Walsh jumped in the air to impede the fullback from Penrith. Ash Klein said he went for the football.
Yeah, the ref overruled him.
Adam G says that doesn't look right. Overruled him. Are other teams going to get the benefit of the referee seeing it on the big screen and tipping the bunker off that they've made a mistake? This is the biggest issue in the game. I actually like the bunker. I think it's there to pick up howlers. I think they're overusing it, though. Whenever a try scored, they just try too hard to overrule it and look for a problem. And I don't think the 8 people they're using in the bunker each week are consistent. As I explained with Radley, that was the most obvious sin bin of the year. And Reed Marnie stayed with sin bin yesterday. I cannot work it out.
Buzz, what are we going to see then come Origin time? Are we going to see completely different refereeing on field and bunker?
Well, look, we normally do, Clarky. And look, I think they've cracked down a little bit on Origin in recent years, but there is a blind eye turned to most of this stuff. And look, I think that's the right way to go about it. It's a showpiece event. It's watched nationally around the country, and we've all become used to the fact that there are different rules to an extent. Look, if there's blatant foul play in Origin, I support the use of the sin bin. If there's continual infringements or professional fouls, I support the use of the sin bin in Origin. But because you don't want to ruin the game as a spectacle, but they will relax the rules slightly, and I actually agree with that. That because look, it's going into 3 million lounge rooms around the country. AFL fans are watching it, and I can guarantee you one thing, Clarkey. If someone makes a tackle like Reed Marnie did yesterday, there will not be any hope of a sin bin. It was just outrageous. It really was.
What a night at Leichhardt, Buzz, on Saturday evening.
Oh, mate, how good was it? How good was that? I wrote this morning, it was the feel-good rugby league story of the season, and good on the West Tigers. And look, I've got to admit, and Laurie, you'll suck up from, I've been very heavy on Tim Sheens. For a reason, they lose their first 7 or 8 games. And, you know, they were struggling. But the way this side, over the last month, the football they're playing, and as Lee Hadjipantelis said in my column today, the football the West Tigers played is an unequivocal vindication of the way that club is heading. And Sheen's 66-18, Luke Brooks' 200th game, and fantastic crowd. No, they're going places, the West Tigers. A lot of work to do. There's a huge question mark now over what they do with Luke Brooks' future. As much as he was outstanding on Saturday night, those sort of games haven't been regular for Luke, and he's been on $960,000 or $1 million a year, and they've got a big question mark there over how they move forward, who their playmaker's going to be. But it was certainly encouraging. I so applaud the mental toughness of Luke Brooks. There is not a more maligned player in the competition, and the way he performed the other night was just outstanding. It really was.
Yeah, I just don't think anyone saw that type of performance coming from the Tigers, where they're able to put 66 points on the Cowboys. But it was great scenes there at Leichhardt Oval. What's the future for the West Tigers, Buzz, in terms of playing at Leichhardt Oval and Campbelltown?
Tell you what makes me angry, and the state government and the new sports minister, Steve Camper, soon to sit down with Peter Volandis about the future of the NRL Grand Final, whether it'll be played in Sydney, Brisbane, Melbourne, or what. Look, I think it'll stay in Sydney, but Volandis is using suburban ground funding as his leverage to keep the Grand Final in Sydney. Look, the West Tigers, though, now are talking about private equity coming in and funding improvements just for Leichhardt and for Campbelltown, and dropping their stadiums out of the equation and just using those two suburban grounds. What makes me cranky is that the government, the previous government, Stuart Ayres, the minister in Penrith, and Dominic Perrottet, guaranteed $309 million to demolish the stadium at Penrith and rebuild one there. And the new government have decided to honour that. I'm not sure that Penrith needs a $309 million stadium as much as Leichhardt Oval, Campbelltown, Brookvale, Shark Park need funding. I would rather see Penrith and all these stadiums get good, $80 million refurbishments, put in decent toilets, all other facilities, better dressing rooms that can cope, with the NRLW girls. I just don't know if they've got it right spending all that money at Penrith and not Leichhardt and these other grounds I've mentioned. But look, Lee Hadjipantelis has told Bulldog in the paper today they're confident that they'll get Leichhardt up to speed. And you guys spoke about it this morning. When I say getting it up to speed, you'll never lose that hill, but they do need, to make it viable, better corporate facilities. Mm. Spoke to the Bulldogs at the start of the year. Remember they had their first game at Belmore Sports Ground?
Yep.
They packed the joint out. But because of the security they needed and, everything else, the extra staff they needed, the lack of corporate facilities, they actually lost money, lost about $50,000 on that game, even though they picked it up. Next week they went to Acol, they had 15,000 people there and they made $150,000 for what you guys have been talking about. So, but these grounds can be brought up to speed, but they need private equity and they need the government on board. And the grand final will be used as the catalyst to get them to spend money.
Just before you go, Buzz, is the market right? New South Wales $1.67, Queensland $2.20. Blues favourites by 2.5 points at the line ahead of the game in Adelaide Wednesday week.
I don't agree with that market at all, mate. You go through that Queensland side, you look at that back line, with Cobbo and Chualungi and Walsh and the Hammer and Holmes. And DCE's been playing so strong for Manly for weeks, even though they've struggled. Munster, look at their pack, Carrigan, Fafita, Gilbert, Fleet. Look, I honestly think if ever I've seen an even money Origin game, particularly with Queensland's record in recent times, even without Ponga, even without... they're going to be so hard to beat. This is even money, take your pick, in my view, this game.
Yeah, I agree.
What do you reckon?
I was always thinking that way, Buzz, but I reckon Queensland with no Kafusi, no Capewell, if he's out, and no Tino, if he's out, I think it swings it massively in New South Wales' favour.
I thought that
the market, sorry mate, would have been a lot tighter because I thought it was going to be, but I look at those outs for Queensland in their forwards.
It's a different balance now. You've got Fafita, who's a machine and going some the best attacking edge forward in the game, coming in for the best hit man. So it's just a different style. And I know the New South Wales halves will be happy that Kafusi's not there.
Yeah, I would be too. I mean, as a half, you don't want to
be facing
him.
And he deserves not to be there because that shot on Welsh the other night was disgraceful. Blatant swinging arm to the head. Could have busted his jaw. Lucky he only got 3 weeks.
Buzz, we'll have to leave it there, mate. Thanks so much.
On you, boys. Cheers.
Well done to the men's seven side who have qualified for the Paris 2024 Games. Stewie Dunbar, friend of the show, and the Aussie seven side. Congratulations on qualifying. Now, over on the PGA Championship over at Oak Hill, oh, we're tied for the lead, it looks like. Yeah, back-to-back birdies, Victor Hovland. Well, down to our producer, Tommy, had a bit of a bet on Hovland after the opening round the other day, so we're giving Hovland strength this morning. Eight under par is Koepka and Hovland.
I think he's going for birdie, though, Koepka.
Okay, right, yep, for birdie and lead. Here we go. So, Brooks Koepka, he's got, what, a four-footer? He's making this, surely. Surely. Yep, side door, that'll do. So Koepka maintains a one-stroke lead with four holes to play. They're heading to the 15th, this final pair. Nine under Koepka, eight under Hovland. And a couple of Aussies have had a sensational final rounds over there in New York. Cam Davis, five under, shot a 65. He's finished three under for the tournament and tied for fourth as it stands. Cameron Smith also shot five under, tied for 10th, one under for the tournament. Scotty Scheffler's had a good final round as well. Geez, consistent Scheffler, isn't he? Four under for the day, and he's actually in contention. He's not out of it here at all yet, the American. Six under par, so two strokes off the pace. Three strokes off the pace, sorry, is Scheffler after that birdie from Koepka. So four holes to play there over at the PGA Championship. Overnight in the English Premier League, and Manchester City, who were confirmed as champions after Arsenal. Gee, Arsenal. Oh, tough to be a Gunners fan. They've fallen apart late in the season. They lost to Nottingham Forest 1-0 on the weekend. City beat Chelsea overnight 1-0. Brighton beat Southampton 3-1. But the relegation battle, well, Leeds are in huge trouble. They lost to West Ham 3-1 over the weekend, and Leicester plays tomorrow morning at Newcastle. And we've got Mossy coming on shortly. And just ahead of Mossy, this text: hey boys, my hero is the Central Coast Mariners for their outstanding 2-0 win against Adelaide on Saturday night, being part of the crowd of 20,059 people. That was the club's largest crowd ever and a complete stadium sellout. Even though I couldn't get a seat with my son, was the best experience I've had in 10 years. My villain's the Cowboys. I don't know what happened, but their season went down in flames just like that meteorite that crashed into the ground up near Townsville on Saturday night, says Duckman. Good nominations there, Duckman, but it looked like a fantastic night there in Gosford as the Mariners made the grand final for the first time in a decade. And Sunday, June 4 at Combank Stadium in the A-League, it is Melbourne City up against the Mariners. 4-1 on aggregate in the end, the Mariners over Adelaide. City into their fourth straight grand final, a 5-1 aggregate win over Sydney FC. In the end, it was 4-0 in the second leg, but this match really turned when Max Burgess was given a red card. And as a Mariner, he would have loved that on Saturday night. G'day, Mossy. How are you?
Very, very well, guys. Yes, it was wonderful. But let me just put the record straight on one thing, mate. Our grand final, we need every supporter we can get after all the issues over the announcement that it was going to be in Sydney, but it is actually Saturday, June the 3rd at Combank Stadium.
No problem
at all, mate. We need everyone through the gates.
I actually got that from the official A-League website as well. But anyway, Saturday, June 3rd.
I'll speak to Danny Townsend today, mate. I'll tell him you're on the case. mate, it was a wonderful night. And Loz asked the question on Friday morning, can the Mariners handle the expectation? Mate, they ticked that box and then some. They were absolutely brilliant. And the score could have been a lot more, really. I want to call it a young side, but it's still got enough experience sprinkled in there not to be a side full of kids, but they are the youngest side in the A-League this season, and it shows what the right balance can do with the right mix of youth and experience, the right mentality. I think Nick Montgomery's played the narrative very, very well, bringing his own history of hard-working upbringing into the dressing room, and they're going out there and representing their manager and the community, and I think that's the key to it. Sean Millichamp, the CEO, deserves a lot of credit for reconnecting that club with the community. It's the only model that works up there, and it's critical that they connect, and to get a crowd of around 19,000, 20,000 the other night was just wonderful to see. It brought back goosebumps, that's for sure.
Just, Mossy, remind us how close this club basically came to the abyss in recent years.
Four wooden spoons in five seasons. And you know, if I think about the model that has got the club to the last two grand finals, Peter Turnbull was the owner. I think he just relinquished ownership of the Mariners to Mike Charlesworth just before we made that grand final in 2013. Richard Peel has now taken over from Mike Charlesworth. And, you know, I don't want to go into too much detail about the former owner, but Peter Turnbull and Richard Peel are all about the community. Their passion for the Central Coast community, I think, speaks volumes to the success that the team has had, because you've got to give the community up there a good football team. And look, it's not the fault of all those coaches over those four wooden spoons. You've got to have the right system and resources and support networks in place, and the right model. And I think they've got it right again. So it's a credit to management first and foremost, because we know fish rots from the head down. And it's just great to see the pride restored in the Mariners jersey.
Well, the best team all year has been Melbourne City, and they comprehensively beat Sydney FC on the weekend. Mariners in Sydney, obviously, hopefully their fans will travel and we'll get a really big crowd. But, you know, obviously there's still a couple of weeks to go before the grand final's being played. But how do you see it sort of playing out in the Mariners? Are they a real strong chance, or do you just give them slight hope?
No, I give them a strong chance. The weight of expectation on Melbourne City, don't forget they lost last year's grand final to Western United. So, you know, for all their dominance, you know, they didn't win last year's major title. So the level of expectation, new manager, Rado Vidicic, who took over mid-season, he's thrown the gauntlet down after the game on Friday night by saying he thought Adelaide would get through. Nick Montgomery's jumped all over that in his post-match on Saturday night. So I'm expecting warfare. Honestly, I think this will be a fantastic grand final. You've got two teams, you know, that I think bring so many different ingredients to the pot to make this a really tasty grand final. I don't think it'll be a cautious grand final. Of course, the first 15-20 minutes, as always, will be two teams feeling each other out. But I think two teams will really go for it. And, you know, Melbourne City did what they had to do against Sydney FC. And, you know, I felt for Sydney FC and Steve Corrick with Max Burgess's red card after 18 minutes. I mean, it's tough enough to go down there with 11 men, let alone 10 after 18 minutes. But Melbourne City were on. They were in the zone anyway. Yeah, I think we've got a cracker coming up in a couple of weeks.
What about the EPL, Mossy? Man City too good? As expected,
yes, mate,
I guess.
Well, yeah. That's right. Spot on, Clarkey. Five titles in six seasons. Pep Guardiola, I think that's his 12th title in 14 seasons, something like that. And if you look at the turnaround in points, I wrote some statistics down around Melbourne City. They've won 12 on the trot. Eight of them have been by two goals or more. They've only been behind in a game for 10 minutes since February. And it's a 15-point turnaround on Arsenal. So really, when you break it down, they've cruised to the title, and they've got one of the three down. So they've got the FA Cup final and the Champions League final to come. So what that does is it sets them up with a fantastic chance to equal Manchester United's treble in 1999. But it also sets them up for a spectacular fall if they don't deliver. So it's going to be really, really interesting watching over the next 3 or 4 weeks.
How do they approach it then, Mossy, with the FA Cup and Champions League there? Do they sort of rest their players now in the Premier League?
Yeah, well, that's always the big question, Loz, isn't it? How do you manage that? They've got Brighton away, Brentford away, and then Manchester United in that Cup final on the 4th of June. So, Pep Guardiola sort of showed his hand this morning by making, I think it was 9 changes to the side that cruised past Chelsea. Chelsea didn't even put up a fight. It was they've been so disappointing this season. Anyway, we could have a whole segment on Chelsea and how bad they are. But, Yeah, I think he'll manage the squad. But you've got to make sure you get the right balance between resting players and keeping the momentum. And that's one of my fears for Melbourne City. If I just go back to the A-League very, very quickly, they had a week off first week of the finals, played two legs, then they get another week off, and then the grand final. So, you know, that could be something that really plays. And the Mariners have had the same, don't get me wrong, because they finished second. So they've had exactly the same schedule. But, yeah, I think that'll be interesting for the grand final. But, yeah. I think Manchester City, I think they'll go on and do it. Manchester United, I think they'll be too good for them in the cup final. And I think they'll have Inter's measure in the Champions League final.
Gosh, Chelsea. 11 wins, 15 losses, 10 draws, 43 points. 12th on the Premier League table. That is a woeful season for a team with such resources. But let's talk relegation, Mossy.
What about going back to Frank Lampard, though, Mitter? Like, seriously, it's one thing on the pitch, but decisions in the boardroom as well.
Yeah.
Anyway, as I said, we could have a whole segment on that one.
Yeah, and we could have a whole segment on the fact we're going to get two of Everton, Leeds and Leicester, big clubs, relegated. And this match tomorrow morning, Leeds, that loss to West Ham, they're in huge trouble. One game left. But Leicester City tomorrow morning at Newcastle, who still need to just confirm that top four spot. Liverpool on the weekend 1-1 against Villa at home, and emotional send-offs for their departing players. But in the end, I think Liverpool are going to fall short. But Leicester tomorrow, it's desperation time.
It is, mate. I don't give them a hope, to be honest. A couple of weeks ago, I said I thought Leicester would scratch their way to safety, but that huge, huge win for Everton a couple of weeks ago, 10 days ago, I think has turned their whole season around. And, you know, I just can't see Leicester getting out of it. I can't see Leeds getting out of it. I think they'll go down with Southampton. And, the rest is history. But that game tomorrow morning, as you said, you know, Newcastle fighting for that European spot, fighting to consolidate that European spot. I'd rather be in their position than Leicester's position, fighting for EPL safety. But you never know what they might bring out. The weight of the pressure can weigh them, you know, almost underground and obsolete. But it can also drive them to do whatever it takes to get a result. So you just never know which way that'll go tomorrow morning.
And Sam Kerr and Chelsea, one step closer to winning the Women's Super League over there. They've beaten Arsenal overnight, and potentially another trophy for Sam.
Ah, just another one in the skyrocket. She's having a wonderful season, and I think this will be their third straight title. They've already got the FA Cup winners' medal in the cabinet, which is fantastic. But look, it's fantastic. And obviously we want Sam Kerr in the best form and the best frame of mind possible going into this World Cup on home soil come middle of July. So, the more she wins, the better she feels, the better she'll play for the Matildas. So keep it coming.
Good on you, Mossy.
Have a great week, guys.
Gee, incredible hole in one at the PGA Championship this morning as well. Michael Block, this 46-year-old who's played a handful of PGA Tour events. In fact, mostly, he's the club pro there at a club in California. Just reading this article, said he charges $125 for a 45-minute lesson. Well, he's having a great tournament over there at Oak Hill. Slam dunk, hole in one.
Fair effort.
Ball straight in the hole, off the tee. Thank you very much.
I reckon his rate might go up now.
Look at you, thinking business, put the rate up. That's it, opportunity.
Opportunity knocks.
And he's one over for the tournament and tied for 15th. Michael Block, a nice little romantic story over there. But Brooks Koepka holding a one-stroke lead from Victor Hovland late on. They're through 15 holes, three to play over there at Oak Hill. Ali Mosley from Sky Racing, a very good morning.
Hello. I can't say I know how much golf lessons are meant to be, but I know how much riding lessons are, and it sounds very cheap at $125.
Oh, gee. Only horses. I mean, how expensive is it, Ali?
Oh, keeps me broke. Happy and broke. Thank you.
Well, backing Bois d'Argent certainly helps pay the bills, and saluted for our listeners as well with Bois d'Argent.
Yeah, I wasn't sure whether that one made it through. I sent through a whole bunch on Friday or Thursday night, I think, and hoped that a few of the goodies would make it through because I was a bit under the weather on Friday. But glad Bois d'Argent was one of them. It was a bit of a nervous watch. He certainly waited until the nth minute to make it there, but he was nice. And then I think our multi almost got up. Isaiah let us down a little bit, but I think we might have even had a place multi as well on a couple of them who I reckon we could follow out of the weekend too, but it was sort of racing action everywhere. I didn't work on Saturday for the first time in about 6 months and I just watched races all day. So I'm just a sicko.
Mm. Did you back the winner in the Doomben Cup?
I didn't, although I tell you what, I wasn't on Zaki. I was a little bit nervous about him, and I was horrified about how short he was. People were just piling on. He just went too hard for whatever reason. I think James said he didn't feel right either. So I'm glad he didn't back him, but he just definitely didn't have a bet in that race. But all credit to Huetor and the team I think we're calling him Huetor now, for having him up there. But I hope Zaki bounces back because he's been such a cult hero for his fans. He's a 10-year-old and got knocked around with those inoculations. And I know James said he didn't feel 100%. So I certainly hope he bounces back. But a great couple of weeks coming up in Queensland.
Certainly is. Stradbroke not too far away, of course, June 10. Queensland Derby coming up as well. And Kovalika, what do you make of the run of Kovalika potentially heading towards the Derby?
Yeah, super, particularly given the documented setback that he'd had the week before with his, I think he'd had a foot abscess maybe or something like that. So he'd had the setback and you never really want a setback like that when you're deep into a prep continuing on to the Derby. So for him to have missed that week and still come out and ran really well third, hitting the line strongly, I think it shows that he would, I imagine, be hot favourite for the Derby and beyond. And then I'm really looking forward to a few of the big races coming up, particularly the sires as well. There's a Kiwi horse I've got my eye on, but we can talk about that a little bit later in the week.
What are some of the horses you've put in your black book over the weekend?
So I've actually put one of the horses in that I think we had in our multi. I just thought it was a super run and more to come from him. He was hitting the line strongly and just getting there in time. That is dream hour. So now with Chris Lees, he did his best work late. So I'm adding dream hour from that race. I think it ended up being race 6 it was, who ran behind Regina, who was always going to be really hard to beat, albeit he was just a little bit short, probably a little bit disappointingly short. And even from that same race, Handy won called Peshmerga with Robbie Quinn. So Robbie Quinn, I'd imagine not a heap would know a great deal about. He's a young Irish guy who is a fantastic young trainer. He's pre-training a lot and he's got a few in work now. He had Mayoshi, who I followed last prep, and he's just sort of ticking away, but he's a great horseman and he's got a Handy one who's just come out from overseas called Peshmerga. She's a mare I think we could follow going forward. It's only her first prep in Australia. So I'll definitely follow those two out of that race. And then also in that two-year-old race, I don't normally follow winners, but I think Celestial Legend has a lot of upside, depending on what he does next, being by, I think he might be done deal, actually. Done deal. So 1,200 will get out over a trip as well, as his breeding suggests. So we'll follow him because I just think that he'll be dynamic as he gets out over further.
Clarkie's disappointed in Pretty Wild.
Devastated.
Can you give us an opinion on Pretty Wild, Al?
I find it so hard. I don't like to be too, too negative about them. I never like being too negative about them. But
Is she looking for more distance?
I would imagine so. She's a tricky one, isn't she? I know she's got the talent there and you can see it. I didn't think she ran that poorly. She was only four lengths off the winner.
Yeah.
In what was a race that was probably setting up not to her pattern, if that makes sense. So I'd say that I think we'll give her another chance, and I don't think from where she had to go from, she probably found a bit of trouble, that we can't forgive her next time.
Doesn't make him feel any better, Al.
Thanks, Al. I appreciate your gentleness there. That was very gentle and kind. Thank you.
Like, Clarkie's expected to be winning. We're talking about a bloke who thinks he's winning, like expected to be winning Everest.
No. I expected her to run top four for our multi.
Had the tongue tie on.
And she had the tongue tie on.
I watched her in the yard one day, and she's got an interesting action when she walks. I don't know if you've ever looked at her, but she sort of has not a
not,
fluent
not need.
Yeah, well,
short right leg.
Well, maybe it's a different walk.
That's a strut, Al, I reckon.
Yeah, a strut probably. And I stood next to Chris and I said, "Oh, she's got a different walk, doesn't he?" And he looked at me and he said, "Are you perfect?"
Chris, not real protective at all. Good boy.
Yeah, half smiled and half didn't. And I was like, I don't know if this was a joke, but I feel like it probably wasn't.
Oh, I love that from Chris. Good on you, Ali. Thanks so much. Chat Friday.